You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow! From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from Vacaville, California. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. What's up, guys? Big question for the day. Let's start out strong. David, are you wearing pants? Yes or no? Are you wearing pants?
I'm not going to let you spin me right off the end, right off the open there. And I'm not going to let you do it. I will say this. I am not naked.
But we have it on. Let's say our sourcing is good. It comes direct from the source that there may or may not have been one of us not wearing pants during that Peter Vermees interview. Is that true or is that false?
I would say Peter Vermees is probably high on the list of coaches who coaches without pants on. So I was respecting his authority and his style.
Well, we can't hate too much. We make Dave turn off the air conditioner. So, yeah, it gets warm. It gets warm in Brooklyn Heights. Big show for you today. The MLS is back. Tournament schedule is out. We're going to go all the way through it. Every single game, the games you cannot miss, the games that will decide all the groups, our first impressions, MLS in the morning, everything you need to know. So, by the way, if you haven't been paying attention, San Jose Earthquakes are the first team to arrive in Orlando. Jumped off the bus yesterday. They're going into the Dolphin or the Swan. I can't remember which one they're staying at. But Wando and the boys, Matias Almeida, I don't know, hitting the pool, killing time, getting tested, quarantining. Those are important things as well, obviously, because of everything that's going on.
It was actually pretty cool because they put up a lot of social media pictures of them boarding the plane. And I saw Andrew in the background begging for a free ride down to Orlando. And there was a denial. You didn't quarantine enough, so they wouldn't let you on the
plane. Yeah. Wando, I didn't mean it. All those barriers over the years. I believe in you, man. It's a new me. Before we get to the schedule here, there is some big news in the soccer world. 2023, book those plane tickets now. You're going to Australia or New Zealand for the Women's World Cup. FIFA announced it like just a couple seconds ago here on Thursday, June 25th. Also, the field up to 32. You guys going? Anything going to limit you? Any problems you're going to have?
I might go to New Zealand because I do have an outstanding speeding ticket in Australia that I was like, when else am I ever going to go to Australia? So I won't pay this. And that might come back to bite me.
You're actually a criminal in Australia, which, of course, is a land of criminals. I mean, Tim Goss, who's pantsless, lives on the edge no matter what continent it is, clearly.
I mean, I was there and I was like, This was built by criminals, so I can just rip the highway as fast as humanly possible. Also, it was all speed traps, so I didn't find out till like 3 months later. So at that point, it's like, I'm definitely not going to pay.
Oh,
this.
Did you get the photo?
No, they didn't. But it had to come through the rental car company across the ocean. So it was like a really long process. And by then it was like, Australia was fun, but I'm never going back. That's so far away. It took such a long time to get there.
Australian for me. Australianwarrants.au. We might go check that just to make sure you're good. But look, 2023, Australia, New Zealand should be a blast. 32 teams in this one. The Women's World Cup, one of the highlights every single summer, along with the Men's World Cup. To me, at this point, they're equal in every way. I want that tournament. I want that soccer. I want that format. I want the best players in the world. And that's what we're getting in 2023. Happy birthday, Charlie Davies. I don't know where that came out of, but I see him retweeting happy birthday wishes. So
weird segue, but like, yeah, happy birthday, Chuck.
Yeah. All right. He's going to get for his gift extra time. I hope he's listening today. He probably will miss this one, but we'll do it in person, I guess, on Monday. TV, ESPN.
No, we should not to see if he listens when he's not on.
That's fair.
This is the ultimate test for Charlie.
All right. You guys ready? Schedule. Let's do it. TV broadcasts every single game, all 54 matches televised on ESPN, ESPN2, Fox, FS1, and 2-Day NA in the United States. All those ESPN matches on ESPN or 2 They're on the ESPN app as well. And of course, Fox Sports and 2DNA have them on their apps as well. There are 10 matches exclusively on 2DNA. They're going to be streamed in English. You know how this works, at 2DNA Twitter handle. Canada, TSN has every match. Every match is streaming on TSN app. TVA Sports is going to have French language coverage of all the Montreal Impact group matches, along with some additional matches, the big games as well. It's on their app as well. You can get the schedule at MLSsoccer.com. I encourage you, go pour through it. Before we get into what we noticed and what our first impressions are, and then each individual group, how is your lifestyle going to change? Because we talk about the World Cup, and I'm already thinking about 2022 in Qatar, and then I'm thinking about 2023 in Australia and New Zealand now, and how that changes my lifestyle. Because it does. It does for all of us. You wake up at different times. You eat at different times. You might be in the group chat a little bit more. You might be glued to Twitter. You might not be going out. You might be saying, hey, I can't do X, Y, and Z these days at these times during these windows. For the MLS Backers Tournament, Doyle, what changes for you? Anything at all? I mean, you are stuck in the, you know, the old apartment with Taquito and General Sal, so they'll keep you company. But do you have any plans?
I mean, I have, I guess, the best laid plans, right? Like, I have convinced myself that I am going to get up every day at like 8:30, 8:45, you know, have some sort of caffeine, and then for the kick of that 9 a.m. game, I will
shot
be
of tequila.
On the. What's that?
Oh, I thought I said shot of tequila at the kick of that 9 a.m. game. Just
tequila, right? but at the kick, I will be on the exercise bike, and I will be on that bike for 45 minutes. Watch the second half of the game. Right. Just relax, shower afterwards, then take a nap because I'm working the late games. So I'm going to be up till about 2 a.m. every night. So I need to get up, get my exercise in, enjoy the game, not think too much about it. Just enjoy that first game, take a nap, and then boom. When I wake up from that nap, my workday starts.
Can you tweet?
This is perfect. This is perfect for me. Are you kidding? This is great.
Can you tweet on the exercise bike?
Oh, yeah, I've done that. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'm professional now, Weeby.
Siri, troll Atlanta United fans.
I don't
Twitter.
They don't troll. No, I would never do that. But no, I'm jazzed about this. Honestly, you know, talking about the Women's World Cup, Weeby, and obviously the Men's World Cup, though 2018 wasn't as much fun. You build your life around it. And we're lucky enough to work, not just in the sport, but for MLS. So, of course, we're going to be watching everything. And I love the idea of you get up and the first thing you have is MLS. You have a 2-hour game. There's nothing else happening in that window. And you get to focus on that game. And to me, this is a treat because you guys know this. Every Saturday during the season, and it's gotten progressively more so over the past 15 years, like there are 9 games happening at once. And like you go back and you watch snippets and you see the highlights, but maybe you get to watch 2 or 3 of those. So this is, I am so looking forward to, I am like all in on this tournament. I understand, like I'm one of the lucky ones because I don't have to go to a day job afterwards. I don't have to, you know, balance work-life schedule. Like work and life are converging for us starting on July 8th, and I'm jazzed about it.
What I like, because I agree, I love the World Cup, but like you get up, there's the 7 a.m. game, and then that's the next 8 hours of your day. So to have that first game to like get up to and get your day going, but then have a huge break where like your actual day will function and then not have to feel guilty to be like, well, I know like my girlfriend's working, but like, I'm just going to keep sitting here watching soccer. Then you can like do a day. And then at the end, when nothing else is going on, because I can't go out and do anything anyway, right, there's like 2 more soccer games to close the day out on. And then it's like, I'll probably watch the first one in bed and the last one in bed and then I'll go to sleep.
So wait, are you going to be during that 7-hour break, are you going to be like the good boyfriend, like cleaning up the house?
Yeah. I cook dinner every night. I'm the only one who cooks. I told her the other day, I think she wouldn't be alive if I didn't live with her, which she laughed at.
Yeah,
heavily.
For sure.
I
would never dare say anything like that at this moment with my wife, 36 and a half weeks pregnant. That would end my life. But this is perfect for me because my kids get up at 6 a.m. And right now I'm sending him downstairs to watch cartoons with his grandmother. But he's setting me up. My like internal clock for the West Coast is now at 6 a.m. So I'm not going to miss any of the games. The problem is, do I have to wrestle with him to get cartoons off for soccer? Because I can guarantee you he is not going to be down for that. But like, I have a mixed bag here. You know, I will be working until baby two comes. And then at that point, I'm just relying on young Wyatt Wiebe to do me some favors. And like, maybe he'll wake up at like, I don't know, if I had to really pick here, like 5:30 a.m. for a bottle. Then I spend the next 15, 20 minutes making that. Then I have him in the bottle, and then it's just perfect dad time. Just on the couch, just a little bit of a rot going here. Got the bottle at the right 45-degree angle, a couple burps. He goes back to sleep. Cameron gets sent off the play, and I just sit there and I mainline Major League Soccer, and then I nap the rest of the day, ideally. Please, God, let these children sleep, because otherwise I don't know how I'm even going to do what will amount to like a 7:30 p.m. game. If I remember correctly, the first time around, I was in the studio at like 6:30 sleeping on couches while working. So I'm hoping to get all 54 matches. I think I can do it. I can't speak as confidently as I would like this time.
When Wiebe was a child, he dreamed one day it would just be him, his newborn son, and Frank O'Hara at 6 a.m. Enjoying some alone time as a family.
Yes. Wyatt, this is Nuhu. One day, son, you will understand the magic that is Nuhu. What's the first thing you guys noticed when you saw this schedule come out, when you started to comb through like line by line and see the games and the times and the matchups? Because we knew the groups. And in Group A, we knew what the matchups were going to be, but we didn't really, like, the deck hadn't been shuffled yet, so to speak. So you didn't know what was going to come up. Now we know what those first games are. We know those are hugely important. That's World Cup. That's logic. You got to get out of the blocks well in order to advance. Doyle, what did you notice from the jump?
I mean, first thing I noticed, I think the first thing everybody noticed was Group A. Yeah, having six teams, everything else having four, just wondering how they were going to balance that. And the league, they got it wrong at first, where they decided that just the top two finishers from Group A would go through. And so they made an adjustment that was announced yesterday in conjunction with everything else. So the format now is that the top two teams from each of the six groups and the third place team from Group A. So the top half of every group, as well as the three best third place finishers in groups B to F, or the best fourth place finisher in terms of points from Group A. It's a lot, but on paper, like, the math all makes sense. It's a more equitable distribution of spots in the knockout round. So, you know, shouts out to the guys at American Soccer Analysis for immediately calling it out and kind of making it their mission to get people to pay attention. I think the fact that they changed that at the league office, you know, good on them. It's, you know, it's okay to admit that you got something wrong, and they've done that. Even with the fix, though, Group A is pure chaos.
Yeah.
Like, it's both expansion teams, right? It's five new coaches out of the six teams, including, you know, in NYCFC, that was Ronnie Dyla, who, like, that was one of the best teams in the league last year, but it's a brand new coach. They didn't score in two MLS games. They, like, you don't know what's going on with any of that. The Union, who were like one of my favorite teams to watch last year, in large part because of Harris Madunian, he's gone. So like, that changes a ton about that team as well. So I love chaos. Like, in World Cups, every time there's a group of death and people fixate on that, I'm always fixated on the group of chaos, and everything about Group A screams group of chaos in this tournament. So I'm just like, oh, give me Group A every day.
Honestly, and the fact that they're not, oh, sorry, the fact that they're not,
nah,
all,
you go,
it's not all, like, you know, you don't have the same matchups. So you can't rely on playing this team at a certain time to jump them in the standings. Like, it's all sort of just like, I talked about shuffling the deck. Like, you just threw the deck up in the air and you're grabbing random cards. That, to me, also makes it super interesting, because all of a sudden you can't necessarily control your own fate in there because your schedule is different. And that is the definition of chaos. You're hoping for, like, oh, please, Nashville. Oh, please, Orlando. Oh, please, Miami. Oh, please, Chicago. All wild cards in themselves. You need to help us because we may not be able to help ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing about this tournament is, you're talking about best third place teams going through. That's that to a T, right? Yeah. You don't get to play any of those teams. I've always hated and mainly youth World Cups, Women's World Cup in 2019, when the best third place team gets through just because there's no opportunity to play head to head. But to Doyle's point about the group you don't want to be in, it's normally the group with the best teams. But this came out and I looked at it and Group E got screwed because Group A through D, the winner plays a third place team. The second place team plays another second place team. Group E, the winner plays a second place team and the second place team plays a winner of Group F. So that is New York Red Bulls, Atlanta United, FC Cincinnati, and Columbus. Columbus, one of the teams I pegged as a dark horse. They have the toughest round of 16 matchup, whether you win your group or not. And then that group winner that will play the second place team in Group E is from Group F, which is the LA, Portland, Houston group. So that was the thing that stood out to me was for those teams, it's going to be tougher in the round of 16. And in Group E, it's chaos. I think it's chaos anyway, because who is Atlanta without Joseph? Who are the New York Red Bulls right now without Brad? What is Columbus? And FC Cincinnati is the king of chaos. For Doyle's point of view, they are his must-watch team at all times. So that it's going to be tough for them, and it's going to be fascinating to see how those teams jog in the standings.
Yes, man, you called Columbus a dark horse. I would actually argue that they're the favorites in that group.
Yeah, I would agree. I said dark horse to win the whole thing.
Okay, all right, that's fair. Yeah.
I'll let you guys go into it more when we get down to that group, because we're going to break them all down. The first thing I noticed, again, we're going back to it, 9 a.m. morning matches. There was some fear among people that there was going to be a 9 a.m. game every day. And for us West Coasters, that was a big fear. I mean, they're used to it, I guess. I'm not with the Premier League. But there are, in the end, only 7 games in the morning. So that's nice. And all of them are going to be on ESPN. So that's nice as well. TSN in Canada. The first one is a classic. Second day of the tournament, June 9th, NYCFC Philadelphia. I think probably the one that's going to decide that group. And then you have some great ones. I think, look, Seattle-Dallas getting the 9 a.m. treatment, that's interesting to me. I mean, I guess they're relying on Seattle fans to be like, 6 a.m. to watch our boys. We're going to do that. Dallas has got that central time, so it's 8 a.m. It's a little bit more manageable for them. And then you finish it off. The last 9 a.m. is RSL-KC. So I think if you look through these morning matchups, there are only 7. So 7 times you start with coffee and eggs and a mimosa or whatever you're going with. Let's shout out tequila. And then you get back to sort of that nighttime, and then you can really build your life around it. Let's just jump right into it. What?
Breakfast is dark beer time. Oh boy. That is a good porter. If you've got a keg and a tap in your place, which is amazing, it's Guinness time. Like morning games, that's when you have breakfast in a cup. That's what that means.
Are you
so just putting that out there?
I'm thinking about after quarantine doing a little intermittent fasting. So maybe I'm just going to have to hold tight on the coffee because things have gotten a little bit loose around these parts. What's the preferred soccer breakfast for you guys before we get into Group A? Like what is reasonable? What can you do? What won't make you chuck on the exercise bike, Doyle? What are you going on?
Protein bar. Protein bars, water. You got to hydrate first thing in the morning.
What a horrible existence.
Just a dry, chewy protein bar on it.
maybe some egg whites.
Oh, God.
Crank out 50 push-ups before you get on the bike. Okay,
the 50 push-ups I'm fine with. This is life after 40, and I don't want it.
Yeah, for sure. Dream breakfast, always bagel with cream cheese and tomato, obviously. Preferably sesame, but we'll go pumpernickel.
No. Tomatoes overrated. Bagels.
Doyle, you just said you start with a protein bar and you think you have space in here in Connecticut? Go back to San Jose.
Everything bagel with cucumber and some Nova Lux. I mean, that's perfect.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't have, sorry, I don't make that real armchair analyst money where I'm just throwing lox out every day of the week. That is literally cash on a bagel.
Oh my God. I would say English breakfast because I love me some eggs and beans at the same time. But again, like I said, it's getting a little loose around here. So probably a green smoothie and shame.
Wait. I get roasted for a protein bar and he holds up a green smoothie?
I'd rather have this smoothie than the protein bar.
The smoothie's better than the protein bar.
Yeah. Protein bars are like one of my least favorite things.
If I'm being real, it's probably like half a hot link cut up in eggs. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a great. Real one. That's pretty good. We got a lot of hot links here. All right, let's jump into it. Group A. Group A, what's the can't miss game? What's the game you look at this schedule and think, God, I got to watch that? And remember, this is the 6-team group with Orlando, Miami, Nashville, Chicago, NYCFC, and Philly. Dave, what's that Can't miss it. Won't miss it. Doesn't matter what comes on the schedule. I'm there.
Come on. It's the opener of the whole thing, which is the first ever time Orlando-Miami face off. And that's obvious on every level for every single reason. It's the first soccer game that MLS will have in like 4 months. And it's the rivalry that you've been waiting for your entire life.
Exactly.
Because you love to make up rivalries. Happening in Orlando, that's it.
What's the over-under on number of years before Orlando beats Inter-Miami? Because it's, what, three and counting with Atlanta. So that's like not even a rivalry anymore. Is Orlando City... No, I'm serious. Is Orlando City going to do their part here? Do they have the team to do their part?
I think so. I think they do.
Explain.
I think this is a moment... And I think we mentioned when we first talked about the tournament, this is an Oscar Pareja moment of like, let's just grind. No one believes in us. Like, I believe in this group, passion, energy, because there's not, it's the first game for an expansion team that's basically never played together. Mm-hmm. And an Orlando team that's new under a new coach with some new pieces in a tournament, in a setting no one understands, in an experience no one understands. This is the, everyone gets super close because Oscar speaks really low. And by the end, it's like, I will run through every wall you could find in this Disney complex before I fail for Oscar Pareja.
Oscar Pareja is excellent, and his track record speaks for itself. And what you just said, that all makes sense as well. But remember, his team, his FC Dallas team and Diego Alonso's team, Santos team, have met in a tournament format before. Back in the, was it 2017? CONCACAF Champions League semifinals?
Yeah.
That was... the team with Chucky Lozano and a couple other, I think Gutierrez was on that team as well. So I agree with you. This should be in Oscar Pereja's wheelhouse in a lot of ways, but it's really in Diego Alonso's wheelhouse. Like that man has won some tournaments in Mexico.
The question for Oscar is, did they make the right decisions? It's not just Oscar, it's in the sporting director as well. At center back in the offseason. Who is Junior Urso? Can he shield the back line? Because Uriel Rosell is not... he's not really that sort of like lockdown defensive presence. He's more metronome possession based. Is Antonio Carlos the guy they thought he was coming out of Brazil? Is he like, he is a pillar. We don't have question marks anymore. Can Jansen take a step forward better than he was last year? Is Schlegel any good? Like that is the big question for them. Because when I see the attack, who I'm getting forward? I'm good with that. Eric Miller, solid. Don't have big questions there. Pereira, didn't see him at all. He's a DP. Is he DP caliber? If he is, I think with Nani and Michelle or Mueller or whoever it is, they're okay. The big question is Dom Dwyer. And I'm going to save any Dom Dwyer takes for the Baron Tees in the mailbag because that's where I'm bringing the spice. But I think this team, I think they have a chance. I don't think they're a guarantee in any way, but I don't think this is going to be Atlanta, Orlando. I think that like crushing mentality aspect that's within that, that a lot of it emanates from Joseph Martinez and also from Tata before that. I don't think that's going to be here. And I think it's Oscar's job to make sure it's not there because Orlando fans can't carry another like just epic multi-year rivalry failure in that way from the very, very jump. The other game got to be
the last word on that from Andrew Weep.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I'm going to pay for that one, right? I'll pay for that one in blood when they just go out there and lose like 4-0.
Oh, boy.
The game that's going to decide the group, though, that's got to be NYCFC Philly. And that's the first game for both of them on July 9th, ESPN, TSN, 9 a.m. That's the first morning game. And by the way, just because you probably are wondering and should know, that first game of the tournament, 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, TSN, Orlando and Miami, and then right after that, Nashville and Chicago. But NYCFC and Philly are clearly the favorites in this group. And if you win the first one, you're off and running because Philly has Nashville next, and then they have Miami, so two expansion teams. And NYCFC has Orlando. Still don't know what they're going to be. And then Chicago.
Rivalry game.
Absolutely don't know what they're going to be. Oh, yeah, that's that classic rivalry, baby. That's a Jason Christ-Adrian Heath rivalry.
Yeah, exactly. Mixed Iskarud. That's a big game for Mix to show up in.
You know,
Chicago's going to be interesting. You did a piece of like the debutantes you're excited to see, which was... you know, garbage, but I'm glad you put it out there. It's necessary for the world. And
hold on a second. Just so our listeners know, David Goss literally cannot write. He literally cannot write. And you get off calling Weeby's piece garbage?
Yeah, I actually...
some of the most indecipherable texts ever.
Yeah,
to the
I got fat fingers. And I don't apologize for it, and I don't care.
It's fine. We don't let David tweet anymore either because of that.
Yeah. But I'm going to take over for the 9 a.m. games and everyone will know it's me. The Chicago team, though, I mean, they're one of the biggest unknowns to Doyle's point of new coach. I mean, new identity, basically brand new roster. Mm-hmm. And they promised us Lewandowski and Chicharito, or at least they rumored it. And they showed up with, you know, Robert Berich and Gaston Jimenez. And that doesn't mean those players aren't good.
Well, that's the top end of that. Stojanovic, I mean, Sekulic, like, I'm probably not saying those right. Alaceda has, he's got the DP tag. I mean, Madron, he looked decent in the first couple of games. We got
good.
Yeah, we got a Twitter message here from Aaron, Ronaldo17. Let's talk about the Fire adding six new starters this offseason, being the most slept on dark horse for the tournament. Yeah, I mean, slept on because we don't know. We just don't know.
And also, this isn't a setting where we don't know we've no experience playing together. We've never played under this coach. We haven't been together as a team for 3.5 months. And then you're going to go in a tournament like this and play at a high level. And I think, yeah, you have your, we talked to Robin Fraser about your methodology of like, I'm sure Wiki wants to start defensive and say like, let's build a base and go off of that. So I would assume that's the focus in this tournament, but still, this is not a place where it's really easy to hit the ground running. And there's a lot of question marks in this team.
My mind, like, I should have saved this for Baron Tees, but I'm just here to watch Francisco Calvo in this tournament. I cannot wait to see what Francisco Calvo has up his sleeve. I remember sitting on the sideline in Minnesota for their very first game in that stadium. And he was playing left back that game, and him making like touchline to touchline runs and just both at the same time doing brilliant things and also doing mind boggling, like terrible defensive things. And that's basically been his existence in MLS from the start. This to me feels like a perfect Francisco Calvo tournament. And I just needed to get that out there that I can't wait to watch this man do work. Does Georgie start? What do you think?
It's a good question. And I wrote about positional battles this week for the website. The Eastern Conference one dropped on Monday. The Western Conference one came out today, Thursday.
Those are good articles, Doyle. Well done. Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you. Georgie had two assists in the first two games, and he played as kind of a playmaking left winger, which was interesting to see. Mauricio Pineda, the rookie homegrown, he was the D-mid, though Jimenez came for the second game. Madron was kind of a ball-moving number eight. They had Fabian Arbers as the 10. Like, any one of those guys, well, I don't want to say any. Madron and Jimenez are starters, but Georgie's going to have to fight for a spot because Alaceda is there now. Stojanovic is there, which means Herbers has to fight for a spot, or Georgie could win the number 10 job, or Pineda could come in and play next to Jimenez in a double pivot, put Madron forward at the 10, or even have Pineda sit as like a pure spraying number six and put Jimenez and Madron forward and press a little bit, and that puts other guys on the bench. So Rafael Vicky, he has some decisions to make. I thought the Fire looked pretty good in the first two games. They were kind of fun. That said, the central defense is still pretty weak as far as I can tell. Like, I don't have a ton of confidence in their ability, either from the run of play or from set pieces, to not shoot themselves in the foot. Now, maybe that changes if they decide Pineda has to become a center back, which I think is his best long-term position. But it's still like, if you're at, these guys are asking why aren't we talking about the Fire as a dark horse? It's because of that central defense. Mm-hmm. It's because in a tournament like this, you have to be locked down, and there's no indications that the Fire are going to be locked down at that spot.
The nice thing for them, though, is schedule, because they get Nashville off the jump. No, again, no offense to Nashville, guys. You're an expansion team. We know you don't have a quote-unquote proven goal scorer, at least in MLS, though Daniel Rios could certainly surprise us. And then you get Miami, too. So they'll start Nashville and then Miami, and then they'll have NYCFC to end it, but they may be in a position at that point where they're saying, okay, we could get third, or we could jump into fourth. If they could get two wins off the jump against those expansion teams, they might be the dark horse. They might be the surprise of the tournament, but we shall see. We shall see. That's Group A. Of course, the schedule at MLSsoccer.com. Let's go to Group B now. Dallas, Vancouver, Seattle, and San Jose. San Jose already down in Orlando. We mentioned that. You can see them. Then they're getting prepared for everything. Things in San Jose just weren't good for them as far as training. They weren't able to get together as a group until way, way late, so it's understandable why they decided to make this move. what's the game you can't miss? It's got to be Seattle-Dallas. I mean, I guess I asked this question and I already know the answer, so I'll just answer it. The 9 a.m. game on July 15th, Seattle-Dallas, ESPN, TSN. I mean, this is it. Like, last year in the playoffs, it was one of those where you just couldn't tear your eyes away. I remember watching those games in the studio, and all of us just, like, you know, you're just jumping up and down. You're looking at each other with the wild eyes. And the beauty of it was the story, which was the team that goes to Cup Finals against the team that wants to be there and has the young guys who are pushing. Can they get over the hump? Can they shock the old guys? And they couldn't quite do it. And then you saw that emotional outpouring on the field from Dallas. And you know what it means to Lucci. You know what these guys mean to Lucci because he's been with them since way before they were professionals. So I think this is both the most entertaining match of the group, but also the one that will probably decide it. It's a second match for both. You would figure Dallas-Vancouver, that's a chance to get 3 points for Dallas. And then Seattle-San Jose, you think they would get 3 points there. And then it comes down to that rubber match from the playoffs last year and who's going to have the upper hand.
Do you think...
Go ahead, David.
Gustav Svensson will be the starting center back this whole tournament for Seattle?
Why would he be?
Do you start Andrade in his first ever appearance next to Arriaga after Absolutely. Not having played soccer together for?
Absolutely. Because this is like, this tournament's a big deal. Seattle obviously want to win. Every team out there wants to win it. But Seattle have long-term goals, which is to get back to MLS Cup, to win their third MLS Cup in 5 years. And there is going to be a regular season after this tournament, and there is going to be playoffs in December, we assume anyway. And so, like, get it done now. Seattle fans don't want to see Gustav Svensson at the six or at center back for this tournament. It just doesn't make sense if you take in the entire scope of what Seattle as an organization are about.
Okay, that's fair.
I think you wrote off Vancouver a little bit too easily.
Sorry, that's like, I went back. My bad.
Yeah, Weeby hates Canada. I went back and I watched those first two games and, like, yeah, they lost 3-1 to Sporting, a very good Sporting Kansas City team. But if Cavallini brings his finishing boots, that's a 3-3 game. You know, and then the second game, they went to the Galaxy and they rope-a-doped the Galaxy playing out of a 4-4-2. They looked a lot more comfortable and a lot more solid in central midfield with Tiber and Inbom, who seemed to have created, at least defensively, a little bit of a, you know, sort of synchronicity in how they approach the game. And both of those guys can spray, too. And that allowed them to push both their wide midfielders up and to get Cavallini and Tosin Ricketts into space. So, I'm not saying that Vancouver are completely out of the woods after what was frankly just a horrendous season in 2019, but they look legitimately good in those for good chunks of those first two games. I'm not saying they're a dark horse candidate to win the whole thing. I just don't think the talent level overall is enough for them, but it would not shock me at all if they got out of this group.
I wouldn't be shocked either. Like, I'm not dismissing them. I think my problem with the Whitecaps is that I always want more from them. That I always think, oh, maybe this is the year. Oh, maybe, you know, Mark Dos Santos is the guy to advance it. Oh, maybe this is the year Carl Robinson gets a little bit more out of this group, gets a little bit more ambitious with the way they play. And I don't know that was Carl. We bagged on Carl a lot on the show. I'm not sure that was always Carl's fault.
I think it was heavily Carl's fault.
I think you have
there were issues, as we are seeing now from stories about the past. There were issues structurally from the top to bottom of Vancouver. There probably still is, but Carl was a big part of that culture.
I don't disagree. But I think maybe they were limited, let's say, at times in the players that they did sign. I'm not trying to absolve Carl Robinson here. I'm just trying to walk you through my psychology of the Whitecaps, which is I'm always like, okay, guys, this is the year where you're just a little bit better or a lot better than last year, and usually that falls flat. I hope for them. My thing with them in this group, though, is you're going to have to beat or you're going to have to get a result against Dallas or Seattle, and you're not going to be a favorite in either of those games. So for the Whitecaps, then you have to beat San Jose. and you have to get a result somewhere else to hope that you're going to get third place and have enough points to be among those other teams that push their way through. And I guess
I guarantee they're saying, I hope we get third place.
I know they're not saying that. I know they're not saying
that. But it's also MLS, Weeby. Everyone can beat everyone in a neutral site where we have no idea what's going on and where people are at. But to write off a result, especially,
I'm not
okay, Seattle have two new center backs. We have no idea what they are. What level is Nico Lodero at? We have no idea. And then you bring a Dallas team in that's young. Who's playing at center forward? What's the mentality for them? Like, there's no writing off a team that has Cavallini up top.
I'm not writing them off. I'm just saying the odds are against them. That's it.
You heard it here, Caps fan. Andrew Weeby has written your team.
Come attack me. Bring it on.
One of the things that we should mention, and we don't know the exact impact of it, is like players operate on schedule. How early before a game do you eat? How early before a game do you work out? Do you get stretched? For Seattle and Dallas to have to play at 9 a.m. and then 4 or 5 days later to have to play at 10:30 p.m. MLS, I think are the athletes that are most used to this, because you play a 1 o'clock game on the East Coast and then the next week you play an 8 p.m. game in California. But still, this is going to be tough, and it'll be interesting to see how teams manage that.
Gasman, if I could be on the bike at night and then keep slinging content all day till 1 a.m. the following morning, these athletes can do it. Come on.
Here's my guarantee. By game two, by 9 a.m. game two, Doyle is drinking at 8:45 in the morning, and he's asleep by the second half and doesn't even make it to the night game.
Shut the bike right off.
Man's out here talking about taking naps through the middle of the day, acting like he's slaying content at like 2 p.m. Get out of here with that one. Caps fans, you know how to get at us. Extra time on Twitter, extra time at MLSsoccer.com via email. 401-206-0MLS is the text line. Tell me why I'm wrong to think that you're not odds favorites to get through here. I just think it's unlikely. That's just me. Group C, 14s here. You have the Canadian Classique, Toronto, and Montreal. And then you have DC United and the Revs as well. So kind of that upper Northeast corridor coming together in Group C.
And can I just say, I like to look at who you play and schedule all this stuff. I think this might be the group that you have the best scenario, because you play after the two groups before you, so you know what you need for third place to an extent. Like Group A, you got to get a result because you don't know what's going to happen. Plus, you don't, like I said with E and F, you don't get lined up as a second place team against a group winner. And so I think this is, in terms of like being able to read the whole field, this is the best group. But at the same time, I think it's one of the most even groups. So it's going to be pretty fascinating to watch, because to what we said with Vancouver, like, this is a New England team that if Gustavo Bo gets hot, they're going to go as far as they want to go. They have players that can carry them in a tournament setting. We don't know what the rest of the team looks like, and we don't know if those players are going to be that, but they have that opportunity. Either Buxa or him, you know, they have different players that can just get hot for three games.
The nice thing too Trillis Heel is wearing cleats that fit him. That's that's different from the beginning of the year when he wasn't doing that and was injured because of it. And I mean, he's a best 11 player if he's healthy.
He was last year. I don't have a lot of questions about the Revs attack. I think it should work. Buxa didn't look great, but he looked pretty good. And when you have pretty good surrounded by Heel and Carlos Bow and maybe Christian Pena, and then they have, you know, a couple of young guys they bring off the bench. Teal Bunbury is still there. Bruce Arena's got a lot of weapons in that attack. I still see the same problems in central midfield and maybe central defense that kind of sunk them last year for a good long while. I mean, obviously they made the playoffs, but they don't win the ball. They have guys who get pulled out of position pretty easily. And the one I like Caicedo better than Zahibo, but Caicedo went under the knife. Caicedo's hurt. So it's Zahibo and Scotty Caldwell. Diego Fagundes started both games this year as like a six. Like, it's really weird in central midfield for the Revs right now. And I think that weirdness was papered over by just a heroic season-long performance from Matt Turner in goal. Maybe he gets that for three more games this summer, and maybe Matt Turner carries them. But like, I just, you can't bet on that time and time and time again. Sooner or later, players, teams, they regress to the mean. And what the numbers say about the Revs is that they give up too many shots. They give up too many good shots. And eventually, we know those go in the back of the net.
Can we just say congratulations to Andrew Farrell? Get a new contract there. It seems like forever he's been in New England. He is a he's a stalwart with that team. So get your money. Also, congratulations to Richie Larea and Marky Delgado in Toronto for getting that money as well. Big question mark, though, with Toronto, because I didn't know this, and it just came out this week, but Josie Altidore has not been in Toronto. He has been in Florida, and he is returning to Toronto, where he'll have to be quarantined away from the team, of course. He will travel with them, per reports, to Orlando. So from Florida to Toronto, back to Florida. That doesn't seem great. It doesn't seem great for Toronto. That doesn't seem like the ideal situation that you would want to be in for your star striker.
With Josie, it's about health. If he's healthy, he's fine. He's been there long enough. The players know him. He knows what to do. If he's not healthy, then Pasuelo's playing a false nine and they went to MLS Cup last year. So either way, it is what it is. I don't know that he's the guy where you're like, well, we need to build this around you. The questions for them are, is he healthy? Is Piatti healthy? And is Michael Bradley? Because if Michael Bradley's not, Michael Bradley's going to tell you that he's going to play every minute of this tournament. So how do you figure that out?
Bradley is healthy, for what it's worth. He's expected to...
No. Expected to, and coming off a six-month layoff and playing three games in 12 days, the way he chooses to play that position are two different things.
It's fair. Piatti's the big question mark. Nobody knows, man, because he's not had a great last 3 years, and we said it when they signed him that it was sort of a... It was a, hey, let's see. This could be boom, or this could be bust. I mean, I think he's in training. He's playing. He's one of my potentials. He hasn't debuted yet, so he didn't play in those first two games because he had the hamstring injury, which was yet another red flag, which was like, oh, God, this was what we were worried about, was would this guy be healthy? Do you fit this guy in from the start? He's a DP. That's generally the way teams in Major League Soccer work. Or do you say, hey, we've had Gallardo for a year. Hey, Schaffelberg and this heat and his like straight line speed, that's actually what we think is going to work best for us. What would you do with Pablo Piatti, Doyle? And what do you think his best case scenario is for this sort of first run of it in Major League Soccer?
I mean, the best case scenario is that he's healthy and he's a you know, worth the DP tag. Like you said, he's had three straight injury plagued seasons and nobody's seen him play much. But we know once upon a time he was a very good little player. So you hope that's the guy that you get this summer. Gallardo is interesting to me because he's a TAM player, and he's looked decent the few times they've had him out there. Obviously, Jonathan Osorio can play on the left wing, and he might have to because Marky Delgado is a better defensive player. And if you intend to play Michael Bradley at six and Alejandro Pazuello at the 10, I think you need the guy with more defensive range in central midfield. We know Richie Larea just got signed. Richie Larea has played right back. He's also played right wing. Nick DeLeon, match winner in the playoffs now for like 8 years. Like this feels like a Nick DeLeon type of summer. He's there as well. So there are like, these are good questions.
Yeah.
I didn't even mention Achara. Achara
is the one I was going to say.
Like the rookie that they drafted out of Georgetown. Like these are good problems to have if you're Greg Vanney. One thing about Greg Vanney is he keeps a low profile, but he tends to figure these things out. He's figured a lot of things out in terms of rotations and different tactical approaches and different formations over the past 5 years.
I like the idea for Greg Vanney that, one, you know he wants a player who can get wide, beat guys 1v1. Everything Piatti does, if healthy. I'd also say for Piatti, it's a pretty simple role. Like, if Josie's healthy and Pasuelo's healthy, that's the focus. You're going to get 1v1 situations. Just get to the end line in the box and cut it back for people. And then I like the idea, if you have that, of saying Osorio plays on the right side, floats inside to connect, and Larea or Aro can give the width on that side. Like, it all makes sense if they're healthy and you assume they'll be bought in because they know when they play with the rotations that Greg Vanney puts together, they've been successful. There's, I think, more question marks on which of those guys are healthy and what you get from them, but there's a lot to like in what they've tried to put together.
their depth is unreal. Like, if you look at their chart and you kind of go through and you're like, okay, well, what if Josie isn't there? Well, you have, you know, Doyle's favorite, Patty Mullins, but Akinola, Achara there that can play those. We know they can do it without a traditional center forward. Every single position, two, three players deep, and a lot of them with, like, academy products, too. Whether you're talking about Okello or you're talking about Frazier or, you know, on down the line, this is a team that has all the pieces. I think a lot of people have left them out. Greg Seltzer did as a favorite, and I was like, you're an insane person for doing that. I think this is the clear favorite in this group. What's the game that you think would decide the group? Is it on that 15th of July, the Canadian Classique, Montreal-Toronto? Is it one of those final day games, Toronto Revs, or is it Montreal-DC? Like, we haven't really mentioned DC at this point.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's a reason for that.
What's the reason?
They didn't look good. With Paul Ariola out, they have generally been poor the last few years. You know, they have a lot of new parts that need to come together in order to be a high-functioning team. It felt like their center back pairing last year maybe overperformed what their ceiling actually is. And to me, they're the fourth team in this group. So I think the one that is can't miss game is obviously the Canadian Classique. The one that I think might decide who goes through is that first game between or who gets the automatic berth, second place, is that first game between Montreal and New England. Those teams have already played this year, and it was a Montreal win at home over the Revs. Montreal countered them to death, and they looked fantastic playing that 5-4-1. But they're going to play, I think, a 5-3-2 now with Wanyama there. It's a little bit different look. They didn't look great in it the one time they played it, but it still functions roughly the same. All that said, the Revs had the equalizer from like 3 yards out in like the 90th minute on the foot of Tejon Buchanan, and he somehow missed it. So the dog wants it. So it's I think Cameron has a new pet. I think that's the game that will decide who gets the second place berth in this group.
Not a new pet. Ling Ling's been around forever. She's a saint. We all love Ling Ling. On to Group D. This is like the Midwest Rockies group, Sporting Kansas City, Minnesota United, RSL, Colorado. Dave, what's the can't-miss game in this group? Just entertainment purposes, circle it on the calendar. If you can't watch any but this, this is the one it's got to be.
I think it's got to be SKC versus Colorado on July 17th, because those are the teams of these four that I think are the most stable coming in, we know the most about. And SKC came out the gates flying. They've got Pulido. They have experience. They've won in tournament competitions before. And then on the flip side, you've got a Colorado team that is confident in who they are. I think they're set up pretty well for a tournament like this. You've got an experienced guy up top in Kai Kamara. If he gets hot, he can carry you. They're dangerous on set pieces. If they don't give up soft goals, I think they're going to be hard to beat and good to get through this group. So that's the one that I say outside of you've got a Rocky Mountain Cup game and the Midwest is nice rivalry game as well.
The nicest rivalry in MLS. Adrian, he's not going to like that, Dave. He's going to say you're under.
He will like my Barrantee, though. I have my Barrantee lined up. He will like that.
Okay, we'll save that one for him. I think the first game in the group, like the first day with, like I've ragged on the Rocky Mountain Cup. It's sort of a dormant rivalry, let's call it right now, because RSL has just been smoking Colorado. But this is a great opportunity in the first group game for Colorado to come out and change that narrative just a little bit in the time that where it matters. But I think that first day is one that you can't miss. Sporting Kansas City, Minnesota. We'll find out who Minnesota are and whether Sporting Kansas City are the team that we think they are, which is sort of a dark horse, but also kind of a favorite. And then RSL, I still have big questions about them. But Colorado have less, and so can they prove it there? I think the final group day is going to be fun, too. RSL Sporting Kansas City, that's another 9 a.m. game. So you get a game that used to be a big rivalry. See if it can still be that on the field, and that could very well decide the group as well. For Sporting Kansas City trying to go first, RSL trying to get in that second or third spot. Just in my spot, RSL fans, don't come out for me. I know that I'm like already arranging teams in my mind as I look at this, but that's the way it goes. What's the big theme here for you, Doyle? Like, what are you going to be watching inside Group D that you think could hinge sort of who goes through and who doesn't?
It's less about who goes through and who doesn't. I'm just like, are Sporting Kansas City, Minnesota, and Colorado for real? All three of these teams are 2-0. All three of these teams, I believe, took 6 points from their first two games. For a decade, we've been saying, give Peter Vermees a big money forward, and he's going to get you 65 points and at least one trophy. Well, they got Polito, and he really did deliver in those first two games. They brought Kyrie Shelton back, and I know that Kyrie Shelton is never going to score 15 goals in a season, but he's such a force magnifier on either wing. Johnny Russell's healthy. Gabby Kindle looked amazing in those two games. Even without Felipe, who went under the knife and is gone for the rest of 2020, this team has was 2019 an aberration for Sporting? I kind of think it was, but I need to see more, right? And we're going to see more against the Minnesota team. David, you said we don't know much about them. We actually do, okay? Because they brought back their whole defense. They brought back Ozzie Alonso and Jan Gregus in central midfield.
But that's like, it. We don't know.
That's your whole spine. That's your whole foundation.
We have no idea where chance creation comes from. We have no idea where finishing comes from.
No, we've seen Kevin Molino and Ethan Finley
say it.
Be pretty good chance creators in this league. I'm not saying either guy is a best 11 caliber player in 2020, but if you have a best 11 caliber entire defense and deep lying midfield, then you don't have to have world beaters in the attack. And oh, by the way, Amaria actually looked like a world beater in the attack in those first two games. So I think that Minnesota is set up well to absorb and counter and kill you with Finley's pace on one side. And, you know, we don't know if Robin Lloyd is going to be anything, but he looked decent in those first two games. So I'm curious about that. And then I'm curious about Colorado, because like Colorado scored 20 set piece goals last year, which is insane. 20 set piece goals in a season is ridiculous. And I said, there's no way they're going to do it again. In the first two games of this season, they scored two more set piece goals. And they've done that while adding a player in Yunus Nnamdi as a number 10 who can create a little bit, who has that flair to grab a goal out of nowhere. They have incredible depth on the wings. They have incredible depth at center back. And they have two of the best fullbacks in the league. Taquito's a big fan of the Colorado Rapids. But, like, it's the Colorado Rapids. So I still don't know if it's real. So for all three of these teams, the question I have is this actually real? And I think of the three of them, the one I'm most confident in is actually Minnesota United because of Ike, because of Ozzie, because of Roman Metiner, because of what Chase Gasper did at left back as a rookie, and because of Young. Like, it all makes sense the way that team is balanced.
Doyle, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but to push back just a little, Kevin Molino has had one full season in his MLS career, and Ethan Finley hasn't had over four assists since 2016. Okay. So, and Robin Lode was nothing last year, and yeah, I thought he was nice. I love Jan Gregus, and I agree with you that stability in the back is actually somewhat unique coming into this tournament, because
modify the word unique.
Nice.
Continue.
Because so many teams changed that part of their team and haven't played. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you have, I would argue, you have almost no center back pairings that you can truly trust in MLS coming into this tournament. Even LAFC, who dominated last year,
sure,
we don't know what it looks like. So all of that's great for Minnesota, but chance production is different. And when you can't score goals, the game gets frustrating and it gets hard. And all of a sudden you've got Metiner flying forward more than you want to, and Gasper getting lost, and Ozzie pushing higher up the field because you're trying to create anything. And now you've lost a lot of the shape that made you good last year.
Then the key is Ike has to be the Ike that we've seen over the last 3 years. And I have all the faith in the world in Ike Opara. I think he is one of the, like, when push comes to shove, you got to perform. It's on you, on your shoulders. He's been that guy over that time. But he's also had injuries with his lower half. He's had some recurring concussion stuff. Like, if Ike is not Ike, like, shut it down, I'm putting you in my pocket, Ike, everything starts to crumble for Minnesota United, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
So that's what
I know, I think that's absolutely correct, and I agree with it. But I think it's also a measure of how we feel about Ike that we didn't even bring that up until 10 minutes into the discussion. He has been absolutely rock solid.
And I would also argue he was that player last year. And if they were better attacking than they are this year, they were still only 5 points into the playoffs. So like, if he's the exact same player, which is the best defender in MLS, and their attack is worse than it was last year, there's nothing he can do. Like, he can't change that.
Their attack is better.
We don't know that. That's based off two games, and it's not based off experience or track record with any of those guys.
You know what, RSL? They're sitting back saying, yes, don't talk about us. Put us under the radar. They've had a ton of change, too, but this is the team where you're like, I don't know, could be anything here. Like, they have some pieces. They have some things you can trust. There's a lot that you can't. Ramirez is new on the right wing. Is Justin Miriam going to be the guy that he was? You know, in flashes for Atlanta?
What does RSL have that you can trust?
That's what I'm saying. What do they have? I mean, okay.
I thought I misinterpreted what you said.
No, I mean, there's like a couple pieces you can, but as a group, they haven't shown it yet. So we'll see.
Agreed.
We'll see. Let's go to Group B real quick. And this is another wild card group, I would say. Atlanta, Red Bulls, Cincy, Columbus. You got Hell is Real in here. That's got to be, I think, the game to watch in this group. I know that people are going to say Atlanta, Red Bulls, but both those teams are big unknowns. Maybe that makes it a reason to watch it. Those are also the first games of this group, which is maybe the best day of the tournament, in my opinion. One day off my birthday, July 11th, 8 p.m. Eastern, Fox, Big Fox, 2-day and TSN, Atlanta United, Red Bulls, which has been one of those on-the-field rivalries. And then you have Hell is Real right after at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. I think that day, just put that in the must-watch. Need to carve out 5 hours for that. What is going to be the game that this group hinges on? That's the big question. I mean, it feels like the first games can set the tone, but I think there's between Atlanta, Columbus, and I don't know, one of Red Bulls or Cincy will do something here. I'm not sure which one it is.
I think it's match day two between Columbus and New York. I think those are the teams. Nice, Doyle. Atlanta United without Joseph Martinez, I have no idea. I don't have much confidence. It could be good. There's a lot of interesting things in that. They signed a lot of players late in the window, so we haven't really seen what these guys can be in their group. But Joseph Martinez is the entire identity of that team, and he's not there. New York has lost a lot of big pieces, but they also know who they are and how they want to play. And almost everyone that's going to play a big piece in this tournament has been in their system for a fairly long time. And that's what they've been building towards. And then I like this Columbus group. So I think that second match day, if Columbus can take care of FC Cincinnati, and I think New York should have a good opportunity to start hot against Atlanta, then you have those two facing off for top of the group.
It's got
to
be Atlanta-Columbus, though, on the final match day, right? July 21st. I mean, that's... No? Doyle? No? God, we're just out here playing bingo and getting everything wrong. What is it,
then? I mean, to me, it's Cincinnati-Atlanta. I mean, Cincinnati outplayed Atlanta in the first game of the season, and that was Atlanta with Joseph for 65 minutes. And, you know, two very good goals from Barco and Emerson Hyndman, but Cincinnati was, I think, genuinely the better team on the field that day. They didn't have Licata. They didn't.
Yeah, they did.
They did. That was, yeah.
That was the second game of the season. They lost to the Red Bulls the first game.
They lost to the Red Bulls. So they didn't have, that wasn't Atlanta with Joseph. I got that. Joseph was already out for that game, but they were the better team that day. But they were a mess for obvious reasons, you know, internally. And maybe they come out of this and they're not a mess. And like going into this tournament, you always, or any tournament, you think, well, who's a team with a striker who could get hot? Who's a team with a striker who could just carry his team out of the group into the knockout rounds, you know, and maybe ruin a couple people's seasons? And if
this is your game to win the group or to get the second, third place spot?
Second, third place. I agree with you that Columbus is the favorite.
And you think JJ Williams is that striker to carry you through a tournament?
Exactly. JJ Williams. But obviously it's FC Cincinnati and they have just been one disaster after another for the past 18 months. But they have a new coach coming in with a lot of experience and a good pedigree. They have a super, like, it's weird to say this, they have a very talented roster now. And Atlanta is missing their best player, the second best player in the league. And FC Cincinnati have Lacadia, who could just ruin teams. So I think this is the one to see, like, who, like, if Cincinnati's for real. If they are, then it changes a lot about how we think about this group.
I mean, I will say
they looked for real in those first two games. They didn't get the results, but they looked for real in those games.
It's probably also exciting because it's probably the only game in this tournament where we will have the exact same experience as the head coach of that team and just watching it on a stream from our couch.
Oh, man. Okay, so we have to do greatest team of all time. We have to finish this thing. We still have group F to go through.
LAFC is the best team. Move on.
I mean, yeah.
Done. You're welcome.
All right.
We'll just say Charlie sees Houston as a dark horse. I don't get that because they're too frail. They have a lot of questions about where to play Darwin Quintero. The Timbers, like, they are set for this type of tournament because Gio Savarese has no problem bunkering. That's what his teams have always tended to play their best at. Galaxy are a mess. They're going to be subject of my guarantee.
This may all change depending on Carlos Vela's status. I hope, I expect he will play in this tournament, but we have not, unlike a lot of the other stars, heard that he will for sure be in this tournament. So TBD on that one. I don't know any more than anybody else does. I just know I haven't seen the news coming out to say, yes, he will be there. If you have any thoughts on Group F, hit us up. Let's get to the greatest team of all time. Final new school, old school, 2017 Toronto FC against 1998 DC United. I feel pretty good about where we ended up with this after weeks and weeks mm-hmm. and weeks of whittling this thing down to two teams. I feel like we hit a pretty good sort of balance between, like I said, the old school and the new school and teams that have accomplished a lot. And we're also great on the field and down through the depth chart. So, Doyle, before we really dive in, help us understand what we're sort of debating here. Help us understand the difference between 1998 MLS, a lot fewer teams, a different world when it comes to tactics and sort of kind of best practices versus 2017 Toronto FC treble winners.
The game is a lot more structured now and was a lot more structured by 2017 than it was in the late 90s. To crystallize it, in the 1998 World Cup, France kind of blew everybody's mind by playing basically a 4-2-3-1. Like, people couldn't figure out what was going on. That was sometimes a 4-3-2-1. Everything back then was like either a 3-5-2 or a 4-4-2, or in DC's case, a 4-4-2 diamond. And the other thing is, like, the game was not compact in the way it is today. Like, teams are very diligent about in today's game. Toronto 2017 were incredible at this, at making the game small, making the field small until you want it to get big. And you think about the way that team scored, like Michael Bradley, Osorio, Delgado on the ball, and Vasquez on the ball in central midfield, and then suddenly it's Justin Morrow up one wing, or up the other wing, and suddenly you've shifted around the entire defense, and then you find these gaps. It wasn't as structured in 1998, but DC United, because of Marco Echeverri and because of Jaime Moreno and because of Ben Olsen and John Harkes and Richie Williams and Tony Sanna as their right back, and because they had really great distribution from Jeff Agus in defense, they were able to move teams around. If you watch that team play, you would say this is a modern soccer team because of the way they controlled and used space, because of the positions Echeverria was able to take up and find and get on the ball and then manipulate entire defenses, sometimes without even touching the ball. So that DC team was incredible and dominant in playing modern soccer before modern soccer, as we know it, really started to exist. At the same time, they were not invincible. And that was showed in the playoffs and in the regular season, though there is a caveat for the regular season because they were missing so many of their best players during the World Cup. But so, they are the one team from that era that you could pluck out of MLS, 90s MLS, and drop into 2020, and they would not look out of place at all.
And just to add to Doyle's point, if you have any time, go to LAFC's website. There's an awesome video they put out of Bob Bradley talking with Jesse Marsh during this quarantine layoff. And a lot of it's like them talking about what was going on at Princeton, DC, and Chicago in the 90s. And like, you know, Bob's saying, Jesse couldn't believe that they were doing video at the time. And Bob was like rewinding and fast forwarding to moments. Then he learned how to cut the tape. Then he talked about the DVD player. So like just him alone, who I think is as progressive as we have in MLS now, his development shows you how the game has changed and how tactics have changed in soccer around the world and especially in MLS.
Also how, from that example, and I haven't yet to go do that, I haven't had time, but it's on my list of things, how technology has changed the way that the game works.
And resources.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if whether it's like, you know, the tracking technology that we have now to see distance covered and where the ball's going and who's touching it and what the sequences are, this didn't happen at that time. If we're going to go into rings culture on these two teams before we make decisions, Toronto FC, of course, were the first treble winners. They won the Supporters' Shield. They ran away with it. They won MLS Cup. They basically ran away with that too. Canadian Championship, they handled their business there. So they won everything that they could win. And then they almost won the Champions League the next year, though I don't think you can count that. Maybe it's context for them. Meanwhile, DC United, they won two things that nobody else has ever won. Copa Interamericana and the Champions Cup against top-level competition. They did not.
Just to be clear, LA Galaxy did win the Champions Cup 2 years later. So it's not two things nobody else.
That's fair. That's fair. But they did not win the Supporters' Shield because the LA Galaxy did. And you heard Robin Fraser talk about that 98 Galaxy team. They won the Shield by 10 points. They did not win MLS Cup. The Chicago Fire won that in their first year. And the Fire also won the Open Cup, but DC didn't put anything into the Open Cup. So we can't. I mean, that is a demerit, but it is what it is. So you have sort of this dichotomy with cups. And I don't know if I get completely preoccupied with that, but I go back to what you said, Doyle, which is that lack of invincibility. Like, if you are the greatest MLS team of all time, it feels to me like you should probably have either been the best team in the regular season during your year, you know, World Cup, injuries, whatever excluded, that's still part of your season, or you need to win MLS Cup. I look at their roster, that DC team, it's unbelievable. Like, it's their starting 11 in those like big games, back line of Pope and Sané and Llamosa and Agus. I mean, those are all full international, top level. Like, I think if you compare the back lines, that's a better back line than Toronto FC's 2017 back line. Olsen, Parks, Richie Williams in the midfield, Marco Echeverri. That's really good. Is it better than what Toronto had? That's where I start to waffle a little bit. And then up top, I think Jovinko and Altidore is I would take over Moreno and Lassiter, and you're probably going to hate on me for that, or somebody might out there, but head-to-head, I think I would take them. And that's why I go with the fan vote, which has already come out for Toronto FC, basically 60-40. I think Toronto FC is the rightful winner of this because they handled their business across the board in every competition that they were in, and because I think their roster at least is the equal of DC United's.
David,
I know. Oh, I'm next.
I see Doyle.
I thought like, Doyle was going to come back
like,
in.
I don't know if I like that.
I mean, the reason they're both in this conversation is because they're both incredible, and there are very few holes in the starting lineup or in depth for these teams. With Toronto FC, you look at, I think, the game progressing and the league progressing, and then dominating later on when, let's be real, MLS got better. And their ability to compete, not in Champions League, but against Club America, against Tigres, like some of the best teams we've ever seen in this region, not just of their time. And then you, with TFC, one of the things that stands out is just you have MLS teams like the Galaxy with great DPs. It was Mauro and Betashore who were best 11 fullbacks. It's Drew Moore, who's on the Mount Rushmore for Colorado, who hadn't finished his career yet and still had things he could do. It's Victor Vasquez. Like, you talk about Lassiter versus Moreno, Marco Echeverri is the real comparison. It's Moreno and Marco Echeverri as the stars, and Victor Vasquez is that third piece that Jovinko and Josie are against. And I think him versus Lassiter is that conversation of like, where's that quality? And Toronto, I think they did it at a time against a great Seattle team in the league. You had Greg Berhalter's Columbus teams. You had Jesse Marsh's Red Bull teams. And you had Tata Martino coming in 2017 with Atlanta and Almirón and Joseph, and they beat all those teams. Yeah. So when you look at what they did, and I think you mentioned the Champions League, whether it's part of it, to me, the idea is they played about 2.5 years of constant soccer at a high level, even losing MLS Cup. And that is a huge part of this as well. So I lean on the Toronto side as well. I think they changed the face of this league. They changed, obviously, the perception of their club in their city. And I think perception of this league in Mexico, in the region, and maybe even overseas with what they did with Giovinco and other players coming after that, and just pure quality on the field.
Doyle, how good was the league in 98? Again, we have to go to you for this because I just wasn't paying attention. But when I go back and comb through that year's results, I think there were only like 5-6 teams that had positive goal differentials. And then everybody else, I mean, that's part of DC being pretty dominant. That's part of the Fire being good. That's part of the Galaxy just whomping people. But it kind of, like, when you look at it, in my mind, I think, why were there so many quote-unquote bad teams? Were they truly bad? Or were LA and DC and the Fire and others just so good that the gap was that big?
I think it's both. I do think that LA overperformed their actual quality with the regular season. Now, that 98 LA team were cupcake smashers. They just any team that had a weakness, they were able to just they're going to drop 4 goals on you. And they had Robin Fraser in defense, and Fraser was excellent. And they had a couple of, you know, Greg Vanney was the left back. They had a couple other very good players on that team, but. And that, look, then they earned the supporter shield. They were really good. DC, obviously, we've talked about this team is legendary. They were much better than almost everyone else. And Chicago were like, Bob Riley did such a good job of putting that team together. And they were so smart and so, they didn't get rattled. If you go back and you watch the first 20 minutes of that MLS Cup, DC's all over them. DC is just killing them, and Zach Thornton is standing on his head, and Chicago's like, whatever, we'll get one chance and we'll make it 1-0. And like 3 minutes later, they got one chance and it was 1-0. And like, once that Chicago team went ahead, even for a team as great as DC, that was that. Those three teams were much better than everyone else in the league. At the same time, that year was the first year I watched MLS and was like, oh man, this league's really got some. This league, like, you could see teams getting better. You could see rookies coming into the league and playing at a higher level immediately. You could see someone like Eddie Pope or Tony Sané developing over the course of 1 year, 2 year, 3 years. And like, once you start developing players like that, then you're becoming a real league. So 98 had that. But the gap between the haves and the have-nots was gigantic. And that's honestly that Bob Bradley and Bruce Arena and who was it? Lothar, who was the coach of the Galaxy. They deserve a lot of credit for that. But it was, I don't want to say, look, it was an easier league to win in than it is. A little bit of an advantage turned into just a chasm in 1998. I'm not sure that's the case. It wasn't the case in 2017. I don't think it's the case in 2020.
Are you talking yourself in Toronto? I mean, it kind of feels like we've already decided this. Are you gonna?
Yeah, we have.
Do you have a protest vote here or?
No. Toronto 2017 won every trophy they competed for, and if not for injuries, they would have won CONCACAF Champions League the next year. It's a bummer that they didn't.
If they could win in PKs, they would have won like 8 more trophies.
I know.
But that's the best MLS team of all time. But I do hope throughout this greatest team of all time bracket, I do hope that people have gotten some appreciation for some of the back in the day teams, certainly those old Dynamo teams from Kalen's time and even before Kalen's time. The Taylor Twellman, Shallery Joseph, Revs teams, Christian Gomez, the forgotten superstar of that era as well. But above and beyond anything else, that DC United dynasty from 96 to 99, get on our YouTube page, find a couple of those old games and watch them play. Watch El Diablo, watch Jaime Moreno, watch them all do work because they were spectacular. And it's been weird to do this because like I just want the power to grab that team, make them all 4-5 again, and drop them into current MLS just to see how they would do.
And one of the things that's been interesting for me in talking about this, people reaching out and being like, I didn't realize X commentator, coach, executive that I know was so good as a player,
yeah,
and what they did as a player. And that's been cool to kind of like bring that back around of we owe a ton to guys like Peter Vermees and Jesse Marsh for what they've done as coaches in this league to progress this league. But they were phenomenal players as well, and they helped change this league on the field as well. So it's been cool to kind of have that conversation and bring that back up.
Yeah, so many of them. I mean, you know, Chris Henderson that we had on here, Preki, who's been there throughout. I mean, there are all these guys that just the thread runs much longer than it sometimes seems, and you have to keep pulling and pulling and pulling to find out. Got to appreciate your history. Just give that round of applause here. I guess I'll be the only one. Toronto FC from 2017, nice. The greatest MLS team of all time, as decided by Extra Time. Let us
you
know.
You guys, as we close out, I've been putting this Toronto FC jersey up the whole time because we've been talking greatest teams of all time and I knew they'd win. Do you know what legend is on the back of that jersey, though? That is a signed jersey.
Devin Plouler.
No. Bigger TFCP.
Benoit Cheru.
I wish. That would be awesome. Benoit Cheru likes to ignore me. No, it is Colin Warner. Right. TFC legend.
Nice.
And every other team in MLS because he played for 19.
I was going to say, he got that impact time too. All right, before we get out of here, we used up all of our time basically, but we got to get the Baron tease in because we've teased him so many times. Give it to me. Give me the Adrian Heath one first. I need that in my life.
MLS is back. Golden Boot winner, Luis Amarillo. Let's go. After Doyle pushed me and I pushed back, that was always the guarantee.
Nice. Like you know, what was his prediction? Like 28, 32? 30, something like that? Yeah.
He's goal per game type guy. That's what he does.
He's got to go 2 goals per game to get there. I'm going to stay on that Golden Boot, but not quite Golden Boot. I'm going to say Dom Dwyer leads Orlando City out of Group A in one of the two automatic spots. The big shocker, Dom Dwyer, coming back with a little bit of a surprise for folks after a down 2019. He lets you know what's up in his adopted city of Orlando.
I will stay true to form, true to the brand, and go negative and say my guarantee is that the LA Galaxy do not advance out of the group. LA Galaxy eliminated in 3 games.
That feels safe, though. Nah, what are you going to do? We'll see if they surprise us. Schedule's out. Let us know what you think. 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com, or just tweet at us. Thanks for listening, everybody. We had a great time doing this. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Adios.